I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, baby!
Welcome one and all you rockers, rockets, and everything in between. This is And the Podcast Will Rock. We are the show that dives into the discography, the catalog of one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time, Van Halen. And if you are not new to the show, you already know what it's about. So thank you for coming along with us. Again, if you're new here, welcome. And let me introduce myself. I am one of your co-hosts, Mark Kammeyer, but with me as always from the great white north, Corey Morissette. I hear, Corey, it's warmer.
It is warmer. Things are melting. It would be in the 40s for you folks in America. And I hear you guys are even talking about finally outlawing daylight savings time. Boy, that would be good.
I really wish we would. I wasn't formed earlier, actually, that Arizona has long since put that away. Like, they're done. They're done with daylight savings time. And I went, I didn't realize we could do that. Can we just do that? Please get rid of it. It's stupid. I hate daylight savings time. It's we're finally in the point to where I believe the days are running the way they should, with a little bit more light in the evening and it's dark in the morning. Cool. I'm great with that. I love it. I hate when it gets dark at 5 p.m. and you can't see and it's midnight. And like, look, I don't know. We're not doing this. It's not my favorite time of year. So we're finally in it. Spring forward and keep it there. That's my vote anyway.
You know what I got to say, Mark, here in Saskatchewan, and I won't talk too much about Canada. I know we got one comment saying no one gives a fuck about Canada. And I hear you. It's just this is the only time of the week
about Canada.
Thank you, Mark. But this is the only time of the week you and I get to chat. So exactly. We hit record and we chat a little bit, and I'm sorry that most people find it boring and like, get to the fucking song. But we don't change time here in Saskatchewan. So I'd be very happy if you guys pick a time and stick with it, because this whole switching clock things, I'm sure must be a real pain in the ass.
It is. You got to change every single clock, because if one clock is off, then your whole day is ruined, because you're going to believe like, oh, wait a minute, I'm early to my thing that I'm supposed to be at this time, and realize, no, you are very late. It's a pain in the ass. I hate doing it. I hate worrying about it. Thankfully, my smartphone is so smart that it's like, okay, we'll fix it for you, dummy, so that you don't forget.
And
thank
you, know
you, smartphone.
And you know what happened, Mark, is I fucked up the time we were supposed to record, because, okay, Mark's not on my time now. So I'm getting ready to go here at like 7 o'clock, and I'm waiting for Mark. I'm like, oh, wait, it's 8 o'clock his time now. So this whole thing is fucking me up now, and I don't like it.
See?
Change it.
No, yeah. It's time to change it, because now our livelihood is at stake. So, but you know what's not going to change about this show? We're never going to change talking about Van Halen, because that is what the show is all about. That is what we do. We discuss the show. We discuss their songs, their music, because we are just humble fans. We're not experts. We're not historians.
Oh,
we're
God,
just
no.
Fans. No, we're just fans, and we like the music and we like talking about it. We are rediscovering the beauty and the art in this incredible rock band that we are already familiar with, but we are re-familiarizing ourselves with it. That's all it is.
Yeah, exactly. And something pretty amazing happened, Mark, last week, and that is the Van Halen News Desk, which is like the go-to for Van Halen information in the world. Inexplicably did a story on us, and they mentioned the podcast. Eric Senich is the writer, and he does one of the best rock and roll podcasts out there called Booked on Rock, and he does an interview with, I believe it was Paul Brannigan, in his new book Eruption, which is maybe my favorite podcast I've heard in the last like 10 years. Like, he just an amazing interview, but I digress. They did a story on us, and we saw our numbers, Mark, go from, hey, we're doing all right, to holy fuck. Because on the Apple iTunes charts, you know, we're all, you know, we would chart in America and Canada and Great Britain. Oh, this is kind of cool. We actually hit some sort of chart. We hit number 4 on Apple somehow. And when you think of a guy like
five,
fuck, like Eddie Trunk does a show and he was in the 20s. And it's like, how the hell are we this high up? It's because Van Halen has a shit ton of fans. Obviously, yes. They're one of the best bands of all time. But a lot of those fans, or a good portion of them, are really diehard, know their shit fans, right? And they're listening to our show and they think we're a couple of fuckheads because we're getting a bunch of stuff wrong. And I get that, and I'm sorry. And I just want to say, if you're one of those diehard fans who knows everything, God bless you. I love you. This probably isn't the show for you, because this is two fans who don't know everything about Van Halen, who are just trying to rediscover the discography. And we're learning so much about Van Halen. I know one guy was like, get your fucking facts straight. They're not hidden anywhere. And I'm like, I know. I'm reading the books. I read Running with the Devil. I'm reading Van Halen Rising. I read the Van Halen News Desk. There's so many great resources out there. And I am learning. And if we get stuff wrong, I apologize. That is not our intention. You know, I think it's fun to speculate on David Lee Roth watching Big Trouble in Little China when he was writing Chinatown and things like that. I mean, because it's fun. But we're just, you know, fans rediscovering this band. And I think a lot of people who have been giving positive comments are like us, Mark, and that, you know, their fans are like, hey, you know what? I haven't listened to that stuff in a long time. And I'm rediscovering the band with you guys and going on this journey of listening through every song in the discography, which I think is amazing. But if you're looking for hardcore facts, this is not the show for you, but it might be coming up, because Eric Senich, the guy who wrote that article for Van Halen News Desk, I've been chatting with him. He wants to come on the show. He wants to spin the wheel of rock and pull up a song. And I guarantee you, he's going to get every fact right. So that'll be the show for those people. Yeah, for all the guys who are rediscovering Van Halen and going on the journey. And there's a lot of them. God bless you. Thank you. Keep tuning in. And we'll go on this ride together. We're going to have a hell of a good time.
If you're looking for the facts, you're looking for the history, all accurate, look no further from that show. We can't wait for Eric to come on. That is so cool. That is awesome. Thank you, Eric. And I can't wait to hear what the comments are after that. It's like, I know you got an expert and a historian, but here's where he messed up. And like, okay, we'll do that.
I guarantee you, Eric will not mess up anything.
the joke's on the haters, though, because little did they know I actually have my PhD in rock and roll. Fact check that. Anywho, now that that's out of the way, let's get down to the nitty gritty. You know, you come here sometimes to listen to us chit chat. We had some very, very nice comments about our chemistry. We do have good chemistry. You and I, we are kindred spirits. But what you really come here for is the Van Halen. I know that. That's why we're here. That's what we're here to do. I guess you told me something funny, Corey. People didn't believe that our wheel of songs was real.
I hear this from a few people, like the, because last week after I released the tweet with the show, we drew DOA, and then we did Spanish Fly, which was the track right before DOA on Van Halen 2. And a lot of people were like, you know, private messaging me saying, wait, there's actually a wheel? And I think people thought that we just made that up, that, you know, either we were drawing random some other way, or we actually have a plan of which songs are going to come up which week. And we don't. We don't prep fuck all. And all the haters are going to tell you, because we don't know our shit and we sound like idiots a lot of the time. That's why, because we don't really prep anything. But there is actually a wheel. The Wheel of Rock is real. There's still 101 tracks on it. I know we have more songs. I'm probably missing a few. I actually went through. I thought I had them all, but the instrumentals are not on there. We're just going to kind of add those whenever we draw a track that's kind of close to it on the album. So we're still over 100 tracks on the wheel, but it's a very real thing. And it's been very much in love with David Lee Roth. The first 17 episodes of the show, we've only had two Sammy tracks. One I didn't think was very good. The other one I really liked. So, and one Gary track, which neither you or I were a fan of. The rest has been all Dave.
You know, the less said about that track, the better. But I am still curious to hear how the rest of that album goes. you know, no diss to you, Gary. We love you, but
Gary's awesome. Absolutely awesome. And actually, little piece of Van Halen news came out this week, Mark, if you want to hear it.
Yes, I do.
In a new interview, it came out that Eddie Van Halen had actually asked Daryl Hall to join Van Halen.
No.
Daryl Hall, of course, from Hall & Oates. I'll read you the exact quote here. Eddie said, "Do you want to join Van Halen, man?" He was half joking, but I think he was serious. I really do believe he was serious. I took it seriously. I went, "Meh, I think not. I think I've got my own shit going on." So that was from Daryl Hall. Now, I love me some 80s music, and I love Hall & Oates, so I'm sitting there thinking, man, that might have been pretty bloody cool to have Daryl Hall singing with Van Halen.
I mean, look, I am quite familiar with Hall & Oates' catalog because I have parents who love that band, so I have heard them quite a lot over the years. That being said, I am well aware of what Daryl Hall can do, or at least what he's demonstrated for us in his music over the years. I don't know if Van Halen would have. I think Van Halen was a little bit too hard for him, just in the sense of. Yeah. And I don't know what some of you are thinking. It's like, well, Van Halen didn't have, you know, all hard songs. You're right. Some of the best songs they have are just the simple rock ballads that weren't very hard, but the lyrics were hard, and the power in the voice was hard because they were sung by Sammy Hagar. But I digress. I don't know that I could see Daryl Hall singing. What would you even call that? Would you call him a Van Halen?
Van Halen. I like that. No, that would have been good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see. I'm in the camp of I can see it. I think Daryl Hall is a great vocalist, obviously tremendously talented. Hall & Oates is a class act. Actually, continuing reading this article again by our friend Eric Sedich from the Van Halen News Desk, where another quote to Daryl Hall: apparently, the synth riff from 1981's "Kiss on My List" inspired "Jump." That Eddie Van Halen told Daryl Hall that, and I totally
now
see
that.
That makes
see.
Sense.
I can totally see that. Yeah. That's so funny. And yeah, and I'm not dissing Daryl Hall as a musician whatsoever. If you haven't checked out Daryl Hall's, I believe it's called Daryl Hall's Place. It was on YouTube.
It's something like that. Yeah, I know. I watched one.
Hall's House.
Yeah, Billy Gibbons was on doing some ZZ Top tracks. It was great.
A lot of really great musicians. My favorite session that I saw from these videos was when Kenny Loggins showed up.
Oh, nice.
And they did like anything you can think of that K-Logs is famous for. They did a variation of it. Oh, so good. So good. But this is not the Kenny Loggins podcast. This is
we
got
to start one. I want to do a Kenny Loggins podcast.
I mean, look, we could. I just feel like there's a ton of yacht rockers out there that are probably already hard at work with it. But and it's not the Daryl Hall podcast because, unfortunately, he turned down the opportunity to sing for Van Halen.
That's
so,
right.
Whoops. But Corey, is there a specific song or album that you want to manifest for this show, for today's show, the post St. Patrick's Day celebration? What song do you want to hear?
Gosh, you know, I've been screaming for Sammy songs forever here, and we're just not getting them. I may try a little reverse psychology again. I love you some David Lee Roth. We've had a few great, like, classic tracks from Van Halen too. Maybe give me something else from Van Halen 1. I know we've done a couple of tracks off there, but give me like OG stuff, because I'm reading Van Halen Rising by Greg Renoff, one of the absolute best, not just Van Halen books of all time, the best rock biographies of all time. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fantastic. The tremendous book. I can't wait to read his book on Ted Templeman, actually, Van Halen producer. So
that'd be great.
I'm going to try a little reverse psychology. If we got something Sammy Hagar, great. If not, mm-hmm. I would love to hear me some Van Halen 1 tonight. How about you, Mark?
I've been manifesting a particular song for the past, let's see, since Saturday. So almost a whole week. I've been just itching for a particular track because of something that happened during the weekend. I got, okay, I need to hear this song. I need to hear it. And it is a Sammy track. So let's just keep manifesting the Sammy. I'm just like, I just have a feeling this is Sammy's week. But maybe I should have gone your route. Maybe I should have gone full reverse psychology. I don't know, but I'm just going to go for broke. Give me the Sammy tune that I need.
Now, can you give us a hint? What album is it from?
I'll give you a better hint.
Ooh.
It's a song on a soundtrack for a very famous movie.
Oh, I know. I would love that song. Love mm-hmm. that song. A lot of tornadoes this weekend, Mark. Is that what you're kind of alluding to?
Funny enough, we had one day where it snowed a lot, and then by the end of the day, the snow had melted because it got a little too warm. So at any moment now, I am anticipating yet another tornado, and I'm not excited by that. I understand the joke that you're making, but at the same time, it's like, yes, but...
Yeah, let's not actually have it. But Mark, I can hear the people yelling, get to the fucking song, so let's do it.
Here we go!
All right, the wheel's spinning. Oh, come on, really? Oh, it's not enough from Bell. I thought we were going to get Ain't Talking About Love. That was the
next
song. I
thought so, too.
Oh, that's not enough. We're getting a balance track. So it is a Sammy track from the last album he ever did with Van Halen.
All right. Well, I guess that's the best we can hope for. We manifested some Sammy. So here we are.
And you know what? Nothing wrong with that. I don't really remember the song. Again, we're not Van Halen experts. Balance is not an album I listened a ton of. Back in 95, I did quite a bit. Actually, the big hit off that album was Can't Stop Loving You, which I love. Like, it's kind of one of my favorite Sammy tracks. And I know a lot of Van Halen purists probably won't be real happy with me, but it's one I really like. But Not Enough was actually released as a single July 18th, 1995. But, you know, it's one that I probably haven't listened to in a good decade. So I'm really looking forward to giving it a spin here today.
Absolutely. And this is not one that I put on rotation constantly. Not of all the Van Halen albums, it's definitely not this one. But I will say that I am familiar with this track. And so I'll be very curious to kind of hear it under sort of the analytical ear, because I've never really done that with this track before. It's never been one of those where I just go, let me hear this again. Let me hear this again. Let me hear what he's saying, do it again. It's like, no, but I'm familiar with it. I'm excited. I'm excited to kind of just dive into it with these new fresh, perspectives that we have for the show.
Exactly. And actually, Mark, there was an instrumental that precedes Not Enough on Balance. So kind of keeping with our theory here, maybe we should listen to Strung Out, which is a minute 30 long. It's the instrumental before Not Enough. What do you say?
Ah, so we give the people yet another twofer.
That's right. Two in a row.
Well, how about that? Well, you're for a treat, and this maybe this will cure your post St. Patty's Day hangovers, or maybe it'll make it worse. We don't know, but we're glad you're here taking the journey with us. So yeah, let's do this, Corey.
All right. It's great because the first instrumental we did was Eruption, which is one of the most famous guitar solos really of all time. And then we went to Spanish Fly last week, which was the lead in the DOA, that nice flamenco guitar, acoustic guitar that sounded like, and again, this isn't a fact, we're speculating, maybe he did it in one take. That's kind of how it sounded. And it's absolutely amazing. I don't recall Strung Out at all. So I'm really looking forward to this. Let's give it a listen.
Let's do it.
Well, that was a thing, Mark.
Well, it did its job. It's called Strung Out, and it's very on the nose title, because at one point it sounds like the piano strings were just completely, you know, cut off, or the guitar strings from an acoustic guitar were sort of flinging out all over the place. But so I get, and also it invokes a feeling of being of uncomfortable sort of anxiety. The little creepy, eerie music underneath didn't do it any favors as well. So Strung Out is aptly titled. I was not prepared for the beginning with the prepared piano sort of thing, where it just sounds like he's knocking on steel pipes that whole time, but really he's just playing piano and it's done a certain way. You piano experts out there, you can explain a lot better than I can. All I know is I am not fond of that sound.
And maybe you're not supposed to be. No. It sounded very much like the refrain from a horror movie. I thought Jason was going to pop out of my living room here and with machete and try and cut my fucking head off. But it very much reminded me of kind of a, you know, the score of a horror movie. So in that context, I thought it worked quite well.
It did. I wonder if that that particular underneath, you know, dark, ominous tone, like strings. I wonder if that was a sample from a horror flick or something like that. It kind of sounded a wee bit familiar at first. I almost thought it was part of the Halloween score, but it's not, but it sounds like it could have been. And then you got everything else on top of it, which just made it more uncomfortable. And it's no wonder, Corey, that you're not familiar with this track. I would venture a guess people that love this album probably don't have fond memories over it.
Yeah, of the instrumentals we've heard, and again, we're fans who are just kind of rediscovering the discography. We're not experts. I don't know what the background for putting this on here was, but as you notice, it kind of cuts off kind of abruptly there, because it's going to lead into Not Enough, which is the song that we spun this week. So I'm interested to see how we transition from that kind of scary horror movie type vibe into this song. This is going to be really interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? Should we start spitting Not Enough?
I mean, we might as well. We need a palate cleanser after that.
All right, here we go. Not Enough from Balance. Well, that piano already sounds a heck of a lot better.
they had to give you the destroyed piano before you saw the beauty within.
I kind of like that, and I'm sure there's meaning behind it that we don't know, but just as a, you know, with fresh ears listening to it, you know, you kind of go from that kind of extreme kind of coming at you to this nice little piano medley. You know, it kind of worked for me. All right.
Oh yeah, it's definitely good.
Okay, I recall this song now. This was I remember this being a single back in 1995, and very much kind of classic Sammy Hagar sounding Van Halen, especially when it comes to the bell. You got that really nice piano. Sammy, as always, sounds great. And you know, once I heard it, this definitely triggered a memory in me.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's not, and it's not even giving you the sense that it's a Van Halen song at all. This very well, if you knew nothing about this song, you just knew it was called Not Enough, and you started playing it, and you knew Sammy Hagar was singing it, you'd probably think, at least from the first 42 seconds so far, you probably think it was just one of his solo ventures.
Yeah,
and exactly. You wouldn't be blamed for that, because it definitely, at first, does not sound like the Van Halen isms. But I enjoy the contrast so far, even with the instrumental Strung Out to leading into this, and then I'm sure what is to come.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's not enough.
Now, before we get rolling here, this sounds like this would have been a huge single in the late 80s, mm-hmm. kind of early 90s. By 95, was it maybe a little too late for a track like this?
95? Yes and no. No, in the sense that, it definitely could have come out still in 95. But yes, in the sense of nobody would have heard it because everyone was too busy listening to what was actually happening in the scene, a la grunge and the 90s alternative wave, all that jazz. And this song just would not have found a place. Also, I didn't realize we were listening to essentially Night Ranger.
It does sound,
at least that's
kinda
the vibes I'm getting.
Yeah, it's very much kind of 4 a.m. Night Ranger. Yeah, a good comparison, but I just couldn't help but thinking if this had came out in 89, this would have been one of the biggest songs of the year.
Oh, I agree. It would have, and no offense to the diehard fans, but it would have kicked Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue's ass.
Ooh, big statement there. And no offense to Night Ranger fans.
Yeah, I said it.
You like me some Night Ranger too, absolutely. But yeah, great ballad. But yeah, 95, just maybe a couple years too late.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I thought that sounded pretty good. I like it when the song ramped up there. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's as soon as the other boys come in, you get the tone of Eddie's guitar. You even got Michael doing his thing, which is nice. It's always nice to hear Michael actually, letting Michael do his thing. And then Sammy gets to expand a little bit more and bring out that familiar vocal style that you know he can do. Now it sounds like a Van Halen ballad to me.
And this week, a bunch of lists came out. Rolling Stone readers picked their top 10 vocalists or lead singers of all time, not frontmen, lead singers. And Sammy Hagar was on that list. I'm like, geez, shouldn't he kind of be though? Like the guy's got tremendous pipes and his, when he led Van Halen was one of their most, was their success, most successful, you could say arguably era of the band and tremendous songs, but tremendous vocalist. I would think he would be top 10 or at least close to it, wouldn't you?
And him not being on that list would be a sham. It's like that list is a sham.
And it was a sham because there was no artist of color there, even though we've had some tremendous vocalists like that, and no women either.
See. Yeah. So it's a bias list as well.
how do you do a top 10 lead singers of all time and not have Ann Wilson on there?
Right. I mean, among many,
Stevie Nicks.
Stevie Nicks I put in there. Hell, this is just me, but I put Taylor Dane on the list, but that's just me. I know a lot of people would be like, who? Like Taylor Dane, come on. Like, that woman could wail. But I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. Dare I even ask what their number one pick was?
Oh, geez. I'll try to look that up. I know, Freddie Mercury was on there, obviously. Guys like that, but I'll look that up as the song keeps playing here. I don't recall offhand.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Mark, kind of a different tone on that guitar solo, wasn't it?
I mean, it still felt like Eddie. And this is another example of, we say it on the show all the time, but it's true. This is Eddie playing a solo that fits the song. He's not going, I mean, he is going a little ham on this solo a little bit, but I mean, again, are you really mad at it? Because it's Eddie. You have to expect a guitar virtuoso as himself is going to do that from time to time. But even so, even with as sort of as kind of, I don't even want to say over the top. I would just say, like, even as sort of rambunctious as the solo can appear, it still fits the song. It still absolutely does not feel out of place. It just feels like Eddie knows exactly what lane he's in, but now he's going to utilize every trick he can whilst staying in that lane, if that makes any sense whatsoever. But yeah, I really enjoy that solo because it's not eruption level like fire, but what it is just, it's just a nice, pretend the song is the sea and you're on a boat and here comes some waves, not big humongous waves that's going to topple you, just some waves to give your boat a nice little rock so that now you're yacht rocking.
Now I got a question for you, Mark. I was doing a little reading here on Not Enough, and one little tidbit from the song was that Michael Anthony was playing fretless bass for the first time on record.
Nice.
Yeah. How does that alter things, knowing that it's a fretless bass as opposed to a fretted bass?
Well, basically, you're not going to get any sort of buzzing in your fret, in the fretboard. A lot of times when you're playing the stringed instrument and your fingers are placed on the frets, you're going to have some buzzing just because of the vibrations in the string hitting the wood. That just happens. Now, there are ways to prevent this buzzing from occurring most of the time, but in any, you're going to still hear it from time to time, depending on where your hand placement on the fret is. With a fretless bass, no buzzing, especially if you know where to go. That's the problem. Or at least that's the trick with playing a fretless bass. You have to know exactly where your notes are. It's almost like being a cellist or a violinist. Mm-hmm. They don't have frets on the necks of their instruments. So they have to know exactly where their finger placement needs to be in order to hit the note clearly. So kudos to Michael. Another famous bass player that played fretless bass quite often, Sting.
Gotcha. And one other thing I wanted to mention, about this song in general, but especially about that solo, Bruce Fairbairn produced this album, and he had done some huge albums through the 80s and 90s, including a lot of stuff for Bon Jovi and Aerosmith and that kind of stuff. There was a great quote from Sammy Hagar's autobiography that I wanted to read to you. It says, quote, "We were making the Balance record, but it was over for Van Halen. If it wasn't for producer Bruce Fairbairn, we never would have finished that record. I knew they were trying to get rid of me. Eddie was trying to make me quit. He would find something wrong with every lyric I'd write."
It seems like there's a pattern here somewhat, and that's not me pointing fingers or having a slight against any member of the band, but there seems to be a pattern with band members and their vocalists in this band. And then sometimes band members and other instrumentalists as well. I'll just go ahead and say it. It seems like there's a pattern with the Van Halen brothers and the other members. It seems like there's a pattern of them. I guess maybe they just got sick of each other. I don't know. Seems to be a tension that happens quite frequently in these eras.
Sammy Hagar kind of alluded to that in his autobiography, that they're just kind of getting sick of each other, but I think this sounds like this doesn't sound like a band imploding to me. This is a very well-produced, well-played track, well-written track. There's nothing wrong with it at all. A lot of great elements to this song. The guitar solo was great. The band sounds fantastic. Vocals are on point. So if this is Bruce Fairbairn kind of patching the band back together to make this record, he did an amazing job.
Maybe that's kind of an allusion to the record cover itself, because we notice it's a kind of a, it looks a bit like a Siamese Cupid, two-headed little Cupid there, but they're split in the middle. So it's like almost like, they're trying to get away, but they're still connected. And I don't know, maybe I'm just reading too much into that. I don't know. I'm not an expert on album covers. All I can say is that's what, based on the story you just told me and based on what the record cover looks like, maybe there's a correlation. I don't know.
Maybe we'll have to ask Eric when he's on the show.
Yeah, he's an expert.
Absolutely. He will know for a fact. We don't know. We're just kind of speculating in what the little we know about the band in this song. But so far, I got to tell you, this doesn't sound like a band, you know, fighting with each other. It sounds very cohesive, and I'm really kind of enjoying it.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We got a minute 35 left. Let's go.
And if it don't come easily, one thing you must believe, you can always have trust in me, 'cause my heart will always be yours honestly.
This sounds so much like a Sammy solo track, doesn't it? Like, especially in those
areas. It really does.
Before the band kicks in, you're like, you expect this from like Iron Eagle. You know, remember he did a song on the Iron Eagle soundtrack? This sounds like one of his soundtrack songs.
It sounds like that. It sounds like he's, or maybe he's singing lead vocals for a different band, Night Ranger. No, you're right. It absolutely feels like it fits somewhere else, but not here. And yet, everything that's happening is working. At least for me, it is.
Absolutely. Now the band is ramping back up. So we're going to get some good Van Halen goodness here, I can predict. Not Enough from 1995's Balance, the last full album that the band would put out with Sammy Hagar on lead vocals. Mark, your thoughts?
Well, if we're just gonna jump right on into it. I'll be honest, I was lukewarm going into it, because again, I am familiar with this song. It's been a long time since I've listened to it, but I knew it was more of their slower sort of ballads here. But I never really paid attention to the lyrics. I certainly didn't know any background on the song or the record that much when I listened to it. And I guess I just, what we do on this show all the time, we listen to these songs and we come to it with an sort of an analytical ear. We listen to it a little bit deeper this time around. And so really listening to it, really analyzing this, I was still kind of on the fence. I think Eddie solo saved it. And then also, look, this song, it's a run of the numbers love ballad. It's fine. That's what Sammy kind of does. He does it really, really well. He does it better than most out there. And I don't know, maybe I'm just being a sap more these days, but I'm, you know, I'm pro love song. I enjoy a good love ballad, and I especially love a good love ballad when it's coming from a really damn good rock band. And you know, how better of a damn good rock band can you get than Van Halen? Am I right? So yeah, by maybe not a huge margin, this is certainly not their best love ballad whatsoever that they would do with or without Sammy, but it's still a decent Van Halen love ballad. And that is, as you can't really ask for too much more than that. This certainly couldn't have gone completely off the rails, or they could have sounded a little bit like they really didn't want to be there. As you say, the producer sort of kind of stitched the band back together because according to Sammy, they were just kind of on the outs. So this song could have been just nothing, just absolutely nothing. But obviously it meant a little bit more. They did it was a single, for God's sakes. There's a video. This song maybe doesn't belong in their top 10, but it certainly belongs in the conversation when you talk about Van Halen ballads, at least to me. That's how I feel about this song. It is, in fact, what dreams are made of. Corey, do you think that Not Enough is what dreams are made of, or was there just not enough dream to go around?
I'm a sucker for a good ballad, just like I'm a sucker for a good riff. And last week's songs, DOA had a killer riff. So as soon as you hear that riff, I'm like, yeah, I'm fucking in all the way. I'm a sucker for a good ballad. Like I said, and I'm probably wrong, I think this would have been a tremendous hit late 80s, early 90s. 95, you know, the music landscape had changed, you know, Nevermind had come out, Pearl Jam was big, all those other bands. And even them, they were kind of on the wane in 95, right? Like that tide had kind of crested and was kind of coming down. So it was kind of a different time in music. And balance, I think, largely was kind of by the wayside. I think this song actually charted at number 97. Whereas had this come out in 1989, it would have been number one with a bullet, I think. It would have been one of Van Halen's biggest songs. But the Van Hagar era of the band, kind of known for their ballads. Actually, listening to this here tonight, I would put it near the top end of kind of their ballads. And maybe it's because I've overheard kind of a lot of the other Sammy ballads. And we're obviously going to get to those as we go on this journey. But listening to it here tonight, maybe I was just in the mood for it. But I really enjoyed Not Enough. And to me, and again, really impressed Bruce Fairbairn, because, you know, there are some albums that a band put out where they're on the verge of breaking up, like something like the Spaghetti Incident from Guns N' Roses, where it just feels like you could almost feel the fractures in the band. Maybe you don't feel that here. And that's just a tremendous job by the producer, because it sounds like a cohesive band, even though by Sammy's account, they were very close, pretty much on the outs at this point.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you said it, all there. I mean, it's just so crazy that this came out in 95. I guess I really didn't think about it the last time we listened to a balance song, and I was like, 95. I think about the era and I think about what was going on in music, and it doesn't seem like it should belong there, but I guess because it's Van Halen, you give him a little bit of a pass. It's kind of like in the early 2000s, might have been the year 2000. I'll need a expert fact checker on this one, but when Bon Jovi decided to come back around with It's My Life, I mean, that song should not have been in the era it came out. It should not have been as big as a song as it was. And that, I would dare say, is probably a whole generation's that's their song by Bon Jovi. Whereas a lot of people would say You Give Love a Bad Name, or even Wanted Dead or Alive, something like that. No, there's a generation out there, maybe even two, that think all Bon Jovi did was It's My Life. And I got news for you. No. But if you listen to their earlier works, there's not a ton of difference, because that's just their formula. Van Halen has their formula. And when Sammy was in the band, like it, love it, or hate it, they had a particular formula, and also it worked. So this is this just kind of makes me, it doesn't shock me. It's just really funny that in 95, this would be the album that they deliver.
And It's My Life came out in 2000, and it was actually a whole new lease on life for Bon Jovi, because obviously huge to the 80s, early 90s, they did Keep the Faith, was kind of in that, you know, when the heck was, I think, New Jersey was 89, and Keep the Faith was like 93, something like that. And forgive me if I'm wrong. It's somewhere in there. And then they released like These Days, another album, you know, kind of on the wane. And then all of a sudden, It's My Life hit in 2000. And boom, Bon Jovi was one of the biggest bands in the world again. And they're still riding that wave. You know, their latest albums haven't been selling that well, but they're still, you know, going on sold out tours. So they're doing very well off that. Mark, if you're interested, I know during the song you'd mentioned, we talked about the Rolling Stones readers poll listing the top 10 lead singers of all time. I found the article. Are you interested in hearing who the top 10 are?
Well, I'm seeing who they have as at number 10, and I'm already like cringing.
Really? It's Kurt Cobain.
I just don't think
Kurt Cobain belongs on that list
in the top 10 as a vocalist. No, I think he belongs on the list, but not that high. That's all I'm saying.
Number 9, Chris Cornell, which
okay, come on.
Yeah. You got to put Chris Cornell on that list, right?
Well, yes, but also you put him in the top 5. What are we doing here?
There's got to be 8 that much better than Chris Cornell. How about number 8, John Lennon? And arguably the Beatles had, like, you know, 2 lead singers, because Paul McCartney sang half the singles as well, and George Harrison, a great vocalist in his own right, sang in that band too. So
I would dare say Harrison and McCartney were better vocalists. If we're just talking about vocalists here, I would say they were better vocalists than John Lennon. So that's just my opinion.
Interesting. I'm a John Lennon fan. I don't know if I'd agree with you there, but all 3 are pretty close. I love them all. Number 7, Eddie Vedder.
Eddie got over Chris Cornell. Yeah. That is bold. That's bold.
Interesting. And over Kurt Cobain.
I love Eddie. I mean, yeah, exactly. But I would put Eddie above of Kurt for sure. But this is a bold move. I feel like there's a bias happening with this writer.
Ooh, number 6, I kind of like Roger Daltrey from The Who.
That's an interesting choice, but okay, I'll accept it.
And I don't know, when I think of The Who, I think of the lyrics, and I didn't think of Pete Townsend and Keith Moon more than I do Roger Daltrey. But hey, number 6, pretty good showing.
For yeah, exactly.
Number 5, Jim Morrison.
No, this list is a sham.
It's a sham. You're not a fan of Jim Morrison?
As a singer, no. As a writer, also no.
Quote, his vocals oozed with sex, aggression, and danger.
Sure.
I'm kind of with you. I think if there's a name on here, Jim Morrison, top 20, sure. Number 5 seems a bit much. How about Mick Jagger?
I mean, but are we talking about just vocalists in general, or are we talking about most influential? Because I feel like these are 2 different things.
Yeah. When you think of great vocals, it's a unique voice. And actually, I was listening to, and I got to give a shout out to our good friends at Pot of Thunder again. Their show this week was on Tom Petty. They did a Tom Petty song called You Wreck Me from Wildflowers, which is one of my favorite Tom Petty songs.
Right on. Yeah.
And they were talking about Tom Petty's vocal stylings, because he has great range, but he has kind of a weird delivery. It's very nasally, right? But it's very recognizable.
Yes.
And that's kind of Mick Jagger. I don't know if he's technically, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, if he's technically a great singer, but he's one of the most recognizable voices, I think, in the world.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, maybe that's what this list is doing, because based on the title, it's the best lead singers of all time. So, okay. So I think maybe there's several things being taken into account here, both presentation as well as ability. So if that is the case, then I'd put Mick right where he's at.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're taking that into consideration, without a doubt. Number 3, Bono. Bono, by his own admission, doesn't think he's a very good singer. And again, when you think of U2 songs, you think of lyrics and you think of The Edge. They're a tremendous band, obviously. But Bono's actual vocal stylings, again, there's a lot of personality. There's a lot in that voice, but technically, is it a great singing voice?
With all due respect to Bono, he's wrong, because Bono is an incredible vocalist, especially back in his... back in his prime days. He would probably even tell you right now are not his prime days, but yet he still, when he's not got a broken ankle or something, he still tours. He still goes out there and performs. I have a buddy who is a diehard U2 fan, never misses them live whenever they come here or when they're in his hometown of Rochester, New York. That's him and his sister's thing. And every single time he comes back with, like, they still got it. Bono still got it. And, maybe there's a little bit of bias coming in there, but I tend to believe him because, he's a critical musician. So you just kind of, you give it to him. I love what Bono does. He might not be what is considered to be a great vocalist. Fine. But if we're talking about presentation and we're talking about stylistically, just like we did with Mick Jagger, and if by subsequent we're talking about Jim Morrison here, then Bono absolutely belongs on the list. Number 3, I would say, is good. I might even put him a little bit higher than that.
You know what? If you don't think Bono is a good vocalist, listen to the Joshua Tree. I think he has so much range on that album, so many different tracks on that album, probably their best album too, right?
It's literally their most popular for a reason.
Yeah. The quintessential Bono album is Joshua Tree. Number two, mm-hmm. Freddie Mercury. And I'm thinking, how the hell is he just number two? Because for most people, including myself as a big Queen fan, Freddie Mercury has got to be the greatest vocalist of all time, doesn't he?
I mean, male rock vocalist, perhaps. Perhaps. There's a lot of, I mean, I would say there's a lot of people in contention for that, but he's damn near close. Putting him at number two is a good spot, but now I'm terrified as to who they might put at number one, which might really just, to the listeners at home, you might witness a full meltdown. I don't know.
Who would you guess is number one on the Rolling Stone readers list of the top lead singers of all time?
God, well, if they put Lennon over at, what was he, like seven or eight or something?
Yeah, he was right up there, yeah.
All right, and if they put the guy they're named after, the band he's in, Mick Jagger at like number four, and Freddie Mercury is at number three.
Freddie Mercury is two.
Two.
Yeah.
Oh God, part of me thinks they're gonna put like someone like Michael Jackson at number one.
No, it's Weird Al Yankovic. No, I'm just kidding. I love me some Weird Al, but number one, Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin.
Oh, well, of course. Okay. All right. Based on how this list has gone just in this top 10 right here. Yeah, sure. Okay. I get it. I would be really mad if Robert Plant was below a few of these people. Mm-hmm. Especially Jim Morrison. It's like, I'm sorry to all you Doors fans. I'm just not. I think that band is incredibly overrated, but it's fine. I understand its influential aspects, especially for Jim, for a lot of people. So, you know, I think the movie starring Val Kilmer was amazing. So there we go.
There you go.
Robert Plant at number one. Yeah. I'm actually more surprised, a few others didn't make this top 10 list, like
Axl Rose.
I'm not that surprised. I'm surprised Prince didn't show up on this list. I'm surprised Ozzy Osbourne's not on this list.
Ozzy should maybe be there. And Wilson, I think, has got to be on that list, right? Stevie Nicks,
right.
I would put on that list.
Because this is not gender specific. This is just lead singer. Okay, then absolutely Ann Wilson belongs on that list. This is a sham. This list is a sham. I'm sorry. Nope. Sorry, Rolling Stone. You fucked up.
You fucked up. You heard it here first. Mark and Meyer said so. But yeah. But, you know, such a thankless task. There have been so many great lead singers and so many great. I want to see their list of the greatest frontmen of all time, because that's when you're going to get the David Lee Ross of the world on there. And Freddie Mercury, I think, still belongs on that list. And Robert Plant still belongs on that list. And Mick Jagger should maybe be at the top of that list, for crying out loud. But that's a whole other conversation, Mark. We should probably start winding down here.
I
love when the fans reach out and offer constructive criticism and compliments. And I want to just highlight a few. Sean Geek and the Fast Fret podcast. If you haven't listened to their show, please go find it and do it. They're tremendous. They've completely caught up on all of our shows, and they're joining us. They said they're in for the long haul, and I can't wait. I love it when they interact with us and let us know what they think of the songs. Another guy who's kind of going through the entire list with us here is a fellow by the name of Michael Green. We mentioned him last show because he loved Dirty Water Dog, and we're like, how? but he's listened to a few more, so I just want to go through his rankings. It's About Time. Oops, I just lost my thing. It's About Time. Don't Hate, Don't Love, Middle. And we were very high on that song. It gets stuck in my head, and I love that song. That's just a personal preference. Honey Baby, Sweetie Doll, he gave a thumbs up to, which I did as well. You did not like it. Learning to See, he liked, which is a song I really hated. Michael Green, definitely on your side on Learning to See. Inside, he did not like. He's on the same page as us. Out of Love Again and Eruption, he gave double thumbs up, also called it the best show yet. I call it the Chris L factor. Chris L from Pot of Thunder was on. He does an amazing job. Please go listen to Pot of Thunder if you're not doing it. It's the best rock and roll podcast in the world. And he really classed up our shitty show. And Big Fat Money, he gave a thumbs up to as well. So that's Michael Green's ranking thus far. And actually, to finish off here, Mark, we got a tweet just a couple hours before recording tonight. The account is Airhead3. Follow him at Airhead3. A new follower. And this is his tweet. quote, working through the backlog and enjoying the Van Halen journey. First of all, thank you very much. He gets it. We're not spouting facts. We're going on this journey. We're rediscovering Van Halen. Thank you so much. He's through episode 8 and he says, quote, I have to say though, Mark's Honey Baby Sweetie Doll equals new metal, therefore outdated and not good, was a super reductive take. Count me, Team Corey, on this one. I'm like, yes, somebody is on my side on one song on this podcast. I love it. Thank you, Airhead 3, and suck it, Mark Kamar.
I guarantee you that is not the only time people have been like, no, we're Team Corey. Like, even the ones that we both agreed on, I guarantee you, they're like, no, Corey made better points. Like, Mark's just talking out his ass, which you're not totally incorrect sometimes. It's fine. That's fine. It is what it is. That's an interesting take from you, sir. But we just appreciate you listening.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for listening and for interacting and letting us know what you thought of the show. And we hope you'll stick with us. Like I said, we're learning as we go. We're experiencing more about this band, and some songs younger Corey might have not liked is now listening to these songs with a fresh set of ears and really enjoying them. And here's another one. Back in 95, I might have been a little jaded when it came to the kind of the power ballad. But tonight, sitting here with you, my friend Mark, with my Coke Zero and my whiskey, after a rough week at work, thinking, yeah, that song just kind of hit all the right spots for you. How about you?
It did. It absolutely. I've got my again, my post St. Patty's Guinness right here, what's left. And I'm just, yeah, I'm always in the mood for hearing good tunes. And even if those tunes aren't necessarily new, if I haven't listened to them before, it's new to me. And, or if it's a song that I haven't, gone back to in a long time, then, you know, I look at it as pretty fresh. And so this was fresh. This was good. And it's Sammy. It's Sammy, man. We manifested a Sammy tune, a good Sammy tune as well. So what more can you ask for? I can certainly ask for no more than that, except for I would ask, Corey, tell the people where they can find you on the social medias.
You can find me at CD Morset on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us at Podcast Little Rock on Twitter and podcastlittlerock.com. And you can also find me doing an Aerosmith show with my good buddy John Mariano that's dropping every Wednesday called Backtracks. Aerosmith Revisited. So we're now two songs into that one on our journey, over 300 songs of Aerosmith. So that's been a ton of fun. Mark, where can the fine folks find you?
And always remember, when John says join my cult, just say no. Cult of Mariano will not win. You can find me talking more about that on Twitter and Instagram at Mark the Bat. Thank you to everyone who came out to the Women to the Front show at the Mercy Lounge. It is a venue that has now officially closed down. That was one of the last shows of the venue. So a little bit of Nashville is dying away, one bit at a time. That's a sad, sad thing, but we appreciate everyone coming out to that. Thank you so much for the kind words. And yeah, be on the lookout for all the stuff coming up down the pipe. Maybe I've got some more gigs you can come up to if you're in the Nashville area. Maybe Corey's got some more podcasts he's going to be on, because hey, he's got a Van Halen one. We've just been talking about Night Ranger a whole bunch, and you never know. You just never know. Tune into that. I'm sure you'll be able to find it on the Deep Dive Podcasting Network, because they are just very inclusive people with a bunch of awesome shows, and you definitely need to check every one of them out. That's what we do here, and this has been And the Podcast Will Rock, and we will rock you later.